I've entitled our lesson tonight, The Wonder of DNA. Because DNA is one of the problems that evolutionists have. When you try to explain things, they can say, well, by millions of years, by random chance, all of these explanations. But when you try to explain DNA with that, it just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. So I'm going to try to explain this in as simple a form as I can. What we know about it, and there is much that we do not know and are still learning. We know that each of the cells in our body is a complex living mechanism with many parts. In order to make this lesson somewhat understandable, we're going to try to explain what's currently understood about DNA and how it works in our cells. Now, each of our cells has a center called the nucleus. That would be here. In the nucleus are the control parts for the cell called the chromosomes. The chromosomes are made up of a material called deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA for short. These chromosomes are wound up in a double helix shape. Human DNA is made of 3 billion pairs of 4 different nitrogen bases connected by 2 outer strands, which are made of alternating sugar and phosphate chemical groups. So if you could grasp all of that, these little cross pieces here are nitrogen bases. They are chemicals that contain the element nitrogen. The strands on the outside of the DNA are made of sugar and phosphate chemicals that are joined together to make strands. And the whole thing fastens together in a double helix shape. And in that combination of those chemicals is all of the information about how our body is to work. Our human cells contain 23 pairs of chromosomes. And on those 23 pairs of chromosomes, there is enough information that if you wrote it out on a sheet of paper, you would have a stack of paper over 300 feet high. And that's just the ones that we know. If we take a closer look at DNA, again, we find these outer strands here made of sugar and phosphate. They are connected by these nitrogen bases. Here are the nitrogen bases and what the chemicals look like. The nitrogen bases are given 4 letters for their names. The names are adenine, guanine, thymine, and cytosine. And they are given the letters A, G, T, and C. And they always hook up in a certain pattern. The A always hooks to the T, and the G always hooks to the C. So as you see in the model here, the A always hooks to a T, and a G always hooks to a B. They have them represented by different colors. But the order in which they are hooked up, in which they appear, is how it is coded. Sort of like a computer is coded with ones and zeros. Well, it depends on how many ones are in a row, how many zeros are in a row. Same way with this. It's like a living computer. All of the information is stored in the order in which the things are placed on the DNA. Now, different sections of the DNA are called genes. The whole chromosome is made up of DNA, but different sections of it, maybe from here to here, is a gene. And a gene is what contains the genetic code needed to produce a particular protein to control the body's activities. Each gene controls a certain thing about us. There are genes that control eye color. There are genes that control hair color. There are things that control height. There are things that control everything about us. And scientists have been studying these chromosomes to try to identify which genes control what. Well, they've found that even the evolutionists, when they look at this, say, wow, that really looks like it's designed. But of course, it can't be designed because it had to come about by random chance over millions of years. The unbelievable complexity of this DNA being made of around 3 million pairs of nitrogen bases can't possibly have been formed by random chance. There's no way this could have happened. Now, on our human chromosomes, we have 23 of them. There are about 20,000 genes that have been identified as to what they control. Scientists have studied these under the microscope and figured out that there are 20,000 parts of those that control different things about us. That's only 2% of what's on the chromosomes. So what does the other 98% do? We don't know yet. Although we're learning. We only know when they say we've identified the human genome. Yeah, 2% of it. 98% we're still working on, although we have learned a little bit more about that 98%. The evolutionist says, that 98% was leftover stuff from the past that you don't need. And so they call it junk DNA. Well, we're finding out that the junk DNA really isn't junk. It has a lot of different uses. Over the last 15 years, scientists studying this junk DNA have found that while it doesn't produce proteins, the genes that produce proteins are called coding DNA. And I handed out a sheet that has all of these terms on it. So if you get lost in the terms, you can look at the sheet and see what it is. The ones that don't produce proteins, the non-coding DNA, does seem to control which genes are turned on or off in the body. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. Because your genes can be activated or deactivated. And that controls a lot of different things about us. This means that the junk DNA seems to be related to how our bodies respond to different environmental factors, to various diseases, causing factors by activating or deactivating certain controlling the coding ones, the ones that make the proteins, in the chromosomes. The junk DNA has also been found to contain regulating controls for the cells in different parts of the body. For instance, heart cells need to do certain things to make the heart work. Liver cells need to do something different to make the heart work. So in this junk DNA, there's all of the different types of controls for all the different parts of our body, as well as some backup copies. It's as if when God was designing it, he said, you know, if something happens and you need a backup copy, there's a spare copy in there. God has thought of everything. The more we learn, the more we find that junk is not junk at all, but rather a complex control mechanism that allows us to deal with everything we might run into in this world. God designed us to live in whatever kind of situation, whatever kind of environment we happen to find ourselves in. So let's try to explain how DNA works. And this is highly simplified, which means this is as much as we know. Here's what we think happens. And we'll start with the simplest explanation. Suppose you're a cook. DNA is like your cookbook. It has all the instructions in it. To make something, you go to the cookbook and you copy down a recipe out of it. That is called transcription in DNA language. That's like writing out a recipe card. The recipe card is called messenger RNA. You take the recipe card then and you follow the instructions on it to make the dish. That's called translation. We would call it cooking. Now, if we apply it to a factory, it works this way. You can think of DNA as the blueprint. Copies are made of the blueprint. That's transcription making the copies. The blueprints are then used to build a protein in a protein building factory called translation. And that protein then controls the trait about the particular cell. Again, highly simplified, but that's the idea. So let's look at each part of this. Let's start with transcription. We've got the instructions. How do we get the instructions over to make something in our bodies? Well, the first thing we have to do, that DNA is coiled up in a double coil. We have to uncoil it. The first stage occurs in the nucleus. The double helix uncoils, the double strands split, and the DNA is separated out. Whichever gene has to be copied. If you need some proteins to control your eye color, the gene that controls eye color will split open, and material in the nucleus will make a copy of it. RNA nucleotides, A, U, C, and G. For some reason, when the copy is made, a material called uracil produces the T, the thiamine, in order to make this work better. And it makes a copy of one side of the DNA. Once that copy is made, it moves out of the nucleus into the liquid part of the cell. So in this picture, we see the copy has been made. It comes out of the nucleus, out into the cell. Out of the cell is a factory called a rhizome. The rhizome takes the instructions that are on the messenger RNA, the copy that was made, and assembles a particular protein from it. How does it assemble it? Well, it reads the code on the messenger RNA three things at a time. That's called a codon. A codon is a three-pronged reader. And it reads three things at a time, and each three combination corresponds to a particular protein, or a particular amino acid, rather. The amino acids then are fastened together to make a protein. Very complicated situation. Now, here's what's happening basically. The DNA is being split and a copy is made. The copy goes to the ribosome, and in the ribosome, it is changed and produces a protein, and that protein controls the body's processes. Now, it'd be nice if we had a video that showed that. Well, we're going to see if we can get it to work. So, give me just a second here, and let's see if we can get this video to come up.
Here's a cell, the basic unit of all living tissue. In most human cells, there is a structure called the nucleus. The nucleus contains the genome. In humans, the genome is split between 23 pairs of chromosomes. Each chromosome contains a long strand of DNA, tightly packaged around proteins called histones. Within the DNA are sections called genes. These genes contain the instructions for making proteins. When a gene is switched on, an enzyme called RNA polymerase attaches to the start of the gene. It moves along the DNA, making a strand of messenger RNA out of three bases in the nucleus. The DNA code determines the order in which the three bases are added to the messenger RNA. This process is called transcription. Before the messenger RNA can be used as a template for the production of proteins, it needs to be processed. This involves removing and adding sections of RNA. The messenger RNA then moves out of the nucleus into the cytoplasm. Protein factories in the cytoplasm, called ribosomes, bind to the messenger RNA. The ribosome reads the code in the messenger RNA to produce a chain made up of amino acids. There are 20 different types of amino acid. Transfer RNA molecules carry the amino acids to the ribosome. The messenger RNA is read 3 bases at a time. As each triplet is read, a transfer RNA delivers the corresponding amino acid. This is added to a growing chain of amino acids. Once the last amino acid has been added, the chain folds into a complex 3D shape to form the protein.
Okay, now that again is a very...
Yes, that again is a very simplified explanation of what was going on. So, this is what we have. Split, make a copy. The copy goes to the ribosome. There it is read. It is produced into a protein, and the protein then controls the characteristics. Seems fairly simple, but yet it is so complex, and so many things have to happen in just the right order. Well, what about some other facts about DNA? As they showed in the video, DNA is more than just wound up. It's also wound around some proteins called histones. The histones make it easier for it to separate. So it is wrapped up and then wrapped around things too. Very complicated situation. There's about 6 feet of DNA in the chromosome. So each of those 23 chromosomes has 6 feet of DNA wound up in it. The other 98%, and that's just 2% that we know about. What about that other 98%? Well, they've been studying that, and they found out that, for instance, in this picture, here's a chromosome. They've sort of stretched it out here. Part of the chromosome makes up each gene. Some genes, we know what they do. They're called the coding RNAs, and they make proteins. Those are the ones we have been able to identify, 20,000 of them. The other million or so parts, the other million or so genes on here, we're not sure what they do. Some of them, they have figured out, will regulate things. They will turn things on and off. Other parts do other things. They are called non-coding. They don't produce proteins, but they are involved in regulating. So I think this is a pretty good idea. We have all this genes, all this chromosome, and we only know about it, little pieces of it, what they do. What does all the rest of it do? Well, here's a timeline of the studies of what they found. Way back in...
Hey, Joe, can you use your presentation?
Oh, I'm sorry. Make it full screen? That's the trouble when you switch back and forth. That's not what I want. There we go. Thank you. No wonder I couldn't read it. The chromosomes are first described in 1879. So we've known about the chromosomes for a long time. They discovered there were parts on the chromosomes called genes in 1909. In 1960... when they started studying and finding out what some of the genes were, they couldn't identify them all. So they said, well, the rest of it must be junk. In 1972, they officially called it junk. In 1977, they found that some of the junk actually did something. So we can't call it junk, so let's give it a different name. Let's call it a pseudogene. So they have tried that idea of calling the junk pseudogenes now, because they weren't sure exactly what it did. In 2003, they were studying fruit flies and mice, and they found that, hey, there's more of that junk DNA that does stuff. And there's more pseudo genes in there. There's more controls in there. And so since 2003, they've been studying the junk DNA and have found myriads of things that it controls. But the evolutionists still call it junk, because they don't want to give up that idea. Part of the 98% has been found to control the structure of the DNA. Part of the controls of the 98% is what makes it coil up like it does. They've also found that a part of the other 98% is in the control of hemoglobin production. You know, we all have genes that control our blood, that make the red blood cells. In some people, that gene is turned off. And if the gene is turned off, you don't make as many red blood cells. And the ones that are made are smaller than usual, and you have a condition called anemia. Now, why do some people have anemia and others don't? We all have the same gene. In some people, that gene is just turned off, while in most people, it's turned on and they have normal red blood cells. Well, how does it get turned on and off? Again, studying this, they found that around the outside of the chromosomes are little things like switches. They're actually chemical markers, but they're called epigenetic tags. And all along that coiled up DNA are these epigenetic tags on each gene. And those tags, if they're moved a certain way, we'll turn the gene off. If they're moved another way, we'll turn the gene on. If they're moved another way, we'll really activate that gene. And so these epigenetic tags that we've just found out in the last few years can turn genes on and off, cause them to be activated or deactivated. Things that seem to turn them on and off are stress, diet, environmental issues, all of those things can be passed on to future generations. You know, we've wondered for a long time, why are some people more susceptible to certain things? You know, we say, well, you know, my father was had problems with alcohol, so I'm more susceptible to it. Why? Or my ancestor had a problem with diabetes, so I'm more susceptible to it. Why? We didn't know why until these epigenetic tags were discovered. Because everybody has a gene that controls those things, but in some people it's turned off or reduced. So if your ancestor, say, had a problem with alcohol, it would cause the epigenetic tag in their DNA to be turned a certain way, maybe hypersensitive to alcohol. When they pass that on to their offspring, that tag is turned in the same position. So their offspring is more sensitive to it too. The same way with other things. Maybe some ancestor of yours had was more susceptible to, well, for diabetes, for instance, that tag that produces sugar, that gene that produces the sugar and processes it, may be turned off or turned down. And so when you inherit from them, you inherit that turned down gene. Now you have the opportunity, you have the right gene to make it right, it's just turned down, like a control knob. So scientists are trying to figure out, is there a way to turn it back up? Boy, can you imagine that? If an ancestor had a problem and you inherited that problem, that there's a way to actually go in and fix it? Turn the gene back the way it's supposed to be? Well, we can't do it yet, but we're still trying to figure out how. We know, we think what controls it, these epigenetic tags, but how do we deal with it? How do we make the changes? Oh, but it just happened by random chance, by the way. No. It didn't have a designer that made it this way. And yet we spend all of this time and money studying these things to find out what just happened. I don't think so. Final note. What about COVID-19? Well, they say it's a virus. What's a virus? A virus is messenger RNA. You remember the DNA splits, a copy is made, that copy is called messenger RNA. It is a copy of part of the DNA. That particular copy is expelled from the body, goes out into the air, lands on somebody else. On that other person, it's taken into their body. And that messenger RNA gets into their cell. Now, messenger RNA is designed by God in our cells to produce proteins. This virus messenger RNA gets in our cells, and instead of producing proteins like it's supposed to, produces itself. It hijacks our cells. It hijacks the ribosomes in our cells so that instead of making what they're supposed to make, they make more viruses. Boy, we'd be in bad shape if God hadn't planned for that. But he did. And we found that in that 98% that we don't really understand real well, there is part of it that produces something called an antibody. Now, an antibody is sort of a Y-shaped chemical. These are some drawings and the best idea of what we think an antibody looks like. The antibody will be produced when our body senses something that's not supposed to be there, like a virus. And it sends out these antibodies. These antibodies, the first one to come out is called a capture antibody. It goes out and it finds the virus and it sticks to one side of it. A second antibody, called a detection antibody, comes along and sticks to the other side, and they seal the virus in. So the virus can't attach to anything. It can't get into the cell. It is, in effect, killed. It's trapped. It can't reproduce. And it is eventually expelled from the body through other means. An antibody is simply a blood protein with a specific area on it that will bind to a virus and stop it from reproducing. So when you get sick, your body starts producing these antibodies. These antibodies get in your blood. They go around to wherever the virus is. They attach to it. They lock it up. And then the virus is taken out of the body, filtered out by the kidneys, filtered out in the lungs or however else it can get out of the body. It's removed. That's what happens. Now, how long do antibodies last? Well, antibodies first appear in the blood of an infected person, whether showing symptoms or not, in about 10 days after infection. Why do they say 14 days you should wait? To make sure that you have antibodies. You see, that gives extra time for the antibodies to form. Antibodies stay active in the blood for 2 to 3 years. Although if you listen to the news, they'll say, we don't know how long the antibodies stay. Well, if they're like every other antibody that we know of, they last 2 to 3 years. The size of the COVID-19 virus itself, that messenger RNA that gets in, is about 0.12 microns. But it's often attached to other things like droplets of water or mucus. Surgical masks and cloth masks will not stop the virus itself from penetrating, but they will block the larger particles expelled by coughing or sneezing. So if you put on a cloth mask, it will catch your cough or your sneeze and stop that much. If you don't have any symptoms and you're just breathing out, and you're just breathing out the virus, it's going to go right through your cloth mask. It's not going to do anything. And if it gets moist, it's even less effective. N95 mask. They're called that because they're supposed to stop 95% of particles down to 0.3 microns. Well, the virus is 0.12 microns. That's smaller than 0.3. They're not going to stop it. However, because it's most often attached to larger droplets, it does a better job than cloth mask. The truth is, we really don't know if any masks are effective against the virus. So why do they say wear masks? Because it makes you feel like you're doing something. And it reminds people to stay far enough apart. Now, that's probably better than wearing a mask. You remember when that first came out, they said, everybody has to do this to flatten the curve. Then they were telling the truth. Flatten the curve means so as many people don't get sick at once, so the hospital don't get overwhelmed. That was the idea. And that was a decent idea. But flattening the curve doesn't mean we're going to reduce how many people get the virus. It just doesn't. It only changes when they get it. If you're going to get the virus because you're susceptible to it, you're going to get the virus. It may be now, it may be later, it may be a year from now, you know, but you're going to get it. Because the virus is still going to be around. The only way to get rid of it is for something called herd immunity to occur. Herd immunity is when enough people have had it, have gotten over it, have antibodies in their system, that the virus no longer has a place to live. It can't just live out in the air. It has to be attached to something. It's part of DNA. DNA is part of cells. So if there are no cells for it to attach to, you know, if there's antibodies in those cells that kills it off, it's eventually going to go away. But that's going to take time. So what are we doing when we do this? Well, we're just spreading it out so it lasts longer and longer. Why do people want to do that? Why do they want to make it last longer? Well, lots of different reasons you could give. I'm not going to get into them. But a lot of them are political. So, you know, the best defense that we have is God's own DNA response, the antibodies. God made our DNA so that when something like a virus gets into our system, our body responds and traps it and gets rid of it. He made us that way. That's why current tests are being done on antibody-filled blood plasma. Have you heard them say, you know, if you have recovered from COVID-19, we want you to give blood. We want your blood plasma. Well, what do they do with that? The blood plasma from a recovered person is full of antibodies. Those antibodies can be injected into a person who doesn't have enough, and they will neutralize the virus. So it's sort of like taking from somebody who's already recovered it, take their antibodies and give it to somebody who doesn't have enough, and those antibodies will work in them. That shows a lot of promise. That's a good thing to do. But you see, God designed us so that we could handle these things. We as Christians need to trust the Lord. Psalm 139:14, Lord, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. God knew what he was doing. God's not surprised by anything that happens or anything that comes along. He's designed it into us. So much we just haven't learned yet. You know, well, we said there were 2% that we knew about. We probably learned about another 1%. So we may be up to 3% now that we actually understand what it does. That's 97% of what's in every cell in our body has this capability. And we don't understand it yet. But you see, the evolutionist says, it just happened. And they wonder why people who know about this are skeptical. Not very many people who actually study DNA, who actually study these things, are skeptics or atheists. Because they look at this and they say, that could not have happened by accident. Tonight we offer the invitation. There's nothing in this world that happens by accident. God didn't have his son die on the cross by accident. It was purposeful. It was designed that way so that we could be forgiven. So that we could have our sins taken away. Tonight we offer that invitation. If you need to respond in any way, you have that opportunity now as we stand together and sing.